Can a big bank get even bigger? It's up to the Fed.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Today, the Federal Reserve is expected to vote on a big bank merger. Capital One wants to link up with the internet bank ING Direct in a $9 billion deal. But as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, there are concerns about the combined company being just too big.
Capital One may be best known for its Viking commercials.
What's in your wallet?
The deal would make Capital One the nation's fifth largest credit card lender. Jesse Van Tol is spokesman for the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, a group of consumer and civil rights organizations opposed to the deal. He says Capital One is less diversified than its competitors, with roughly 75% of its profits coming from credit cards.
Capital One is more likely to fail than some of its competitors because of the nature of its very risky credit card business.
Others say the Federal Reserve needs to complete the Wall Street reforms it started. Chris Cole is with the Independent Community Bankers of America.
They need to finalize all the Dodd-Frank regulation and be able to evaluate the full systemic risk of all these large banks before they begin creating new ones.
If the Capital One deal goes forward, opponents say taxpayers could be on the hook for another bank considered too big to fail. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
This week, the new government of Spain is expected to announce a set of sweeping labor reforms. The government wants to give businesses more power to hire and fire and set employee salaries. Spain had a 23% unemployment rate at the end of last year. Let me just repeat that again. 23%. Two people who are living that are Elena Prensa and Ana Diaz. They're with us now from Madrid. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Ana, let me start with you. Tell us about your situation and what's happened with your employment.
Well, I used to work at an NGO. This NGO in particular depended mostly on government funds, and they had to fire people, but I volunteered to be fired because at the time I had a little girl and I wanted to spend more time with her, and I never thought it would be hard to find work later.
And Elena, tell me about your situation.
Well, I am unemployed for 2 weeks. And, I've been working my whole life. This is the first time that I am unemployed. Now I am going to take a big rest. I don't want to think about it too deeply, you know.
Ana, let me go back to you. Tell us what it's like in Spain right now with an unemployment rate that high.
I think the key to understanding that high unemployment rate is you have to understand in Spain there's a huge black market economy. In the U.S., people are very law-abiding. In Spain, culturally, people are not especially law-abiding. Hmm. It's not uncommon for somebody to be legally living off unemployment and then unofficially getting money from some other job that they're not declaring.
So, Elena, is that your sense as well, that the situation really isn't so bad, that people are able to get work, they have a safety net from the government with this unemployment, things are not really so bad?
Yes, I totally agree with her. I think there is a big, big black market.
The U.S. has about an 8.5% unemployment rate right now. Spain, as we said, has an unemployment rate of higher than 20%. But do you think, Ana, we'll start with you, that life is better there or here right now?
I think social services are very important, and I think the U.S. lacks those social services. So I would say life is better in Spain because you have health care. You know, if your kids get sick, you know you're going to be able to take them to the doctor for free. You have those safety nets, which I think that's essential to a good life.
Elena, what about you? Do you think life is better in the United States or in Spain right now?
I wouldn't mind to stay there in America for 1 year, maybe 2 years. And I would apply for this job there if I had the opportunity to do it. But I'm Spanish, and I love the Spanish culture. It's very deep inside me.
Elena Prensa and Ana Diaz joining us from Madrid. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you to you.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in overseas trading this morning, up more than 1% in Tokyo and about 0.5% higher in Frankfurt. Also higher, visits to Disney theme parks, which the company says were up 3% at the end of last year. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow inched up 33 points to close at 12,878.
show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Grand Canyon National Park is about to stop selling bottled water. A fifth of the canyon's waste is from plastic bottles. But the ban is not going down well with everyone, as Scott Tong reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
The ban follows an activist and corporate tug-of-war and some pretty interesting emails about Coca-Cola. You see, Coke sells Dasani bottled water, and it's donated $13 million to national parks. More than a year ago, the head of the National Park Service seemed nervous about the ban in an email. Quote, there are going to be consequences since Coke is a major sponsor. Coke officials complained the ban was disturbing. Then, last June, the service director caved, argues Jeff Rook at the nonprofit Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.
Consumer choice was going to be the policy, and that is exactly the line that the bottlers have been using. Consumer choice is for shopping malls, not for national parks.
His group released the emails in November, at which point angry activists launched a petition campaign. The new ban means they win for now. If there's a backlash from Coke or other sponsors, parks could face money shortages at a time when taxpayer money is tight. For the record, a Coke spokesperson says the company's support will continue. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, we've heard about trucks crashing and spilling ice cream or olive oil or pumpkins at Halloween. Well, in Germany yesterday morning, a truck spilled what only a German truck could, sauerkraut, all over the highway. And since it's below freezing there, the sauerkraut froze to the road, causing a major traffic jam. The pickled cabbage had to be scraped off before cars could pass. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.